The end of the world as we knew it didn't happen on a single day. It was more like a series of dates that all pointed to the fact that everything was shifting. The shift had already been happening, but COVID-19 let us know that nothing was safe, nothing was sacred, and the new rules didn't care about anything that we had held dear before. As the world rapidly changed, we had to change along with it. This is the fourth in a series of conversations we had with five key Africans who gave us insight into how they experienced this change.
You have to sit with this gentleman right here. You're the guy with the words.
You're the guy with the English.
You're the guy with the English.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so grateful. And guys, again, thank you for inviting me. And it's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Simon Mwewalane TV has become a giant brand, birthed in Zambia but spreading its tentacles worldwide thanks to TikTok and Facebook. His numbers across social media platforms have exceeded 1 million, an impressive feat, especially for someone who was born in the same year the floppy disk was invented by IBM. The man behind the brand refers to himself as a blogger. He's also called the man with English words. Others know him as Mr. Mwewa, and in another world, he's considered a polarizing personality, courting a fair share of controversy via his no-holds-barred social media posts. From whichever angle one looks at him, one thing is certain. He's a fascinating man who we wanted to understand a little bit better.
Right, and as you guys keep listening in, I'm sure you'll be able to tell why he's here. I wouldn't even know where to begin to describe what Mr. Mwewa does. How would you describe Mr. Mwewa?
Well, this is one thing that crossed my mind earlier on. You see, I met him when I worked at a radio station in Zambia called Radio Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And he had a show on the station. Mm-hmm. But you see, the difference with other individuals is they'll land in radio and they'll stay in radio, mm-hmm, because maybe that's what they do. But I'm kind of thinking now, you know, with hindsight, that he probably is different in the sense that he identifies platforms that'll carry messages. So for him, radio is like, there's one platform. And then later on TikTok, there's another platform. You probably are a person who observes platforms and how you can maximize their use to kind of carry on your communication and your messaging and so on. Am I right?
Well, you know, that's a very flattering thing to say. And I appreciate you saying that. I love communicating. And it's interesting now that you say it the way you've said it. You know, I want to believe that you're correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I absolutely. Because you said that so eloquently.
He gets like that sometimes with the words. Speaking of the words, one description of who you are, I'm going to say, came from one of the videos you posted. I think you were chilling out at a restaurant in Melrose Arch or something.
Yeah.
And the waitress came through and she said, "Hey, I know you." And you were like, "Okay, I'm known also. I'm also known out here in these parts away from my stomping grounds."
You know, that really, I just, oftentimes on TikTok, I imagine you guys on TikTok. Mm. But one of the things that you see on there is TikTok creators constantly talking about how they were first recognized, and
right.
And in fact, there's a TikTok thing out there that you know, it's a parody. You know, it's the moment someone recognizes you, somehow you think that you're this big star. But yeah, I was chuffed.
Yeah,
to say the very
understandably,
that this young lady here in South Africa recognized me. And I was just over the moon about that. Yeah.
It's awesome to get recognition for what you do. Let's talk a little bit about those words and your use of language. How did you become so proficient and eloquent at the use of language? And why is it so important for you that language be used so efficiently and eloquently?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, let me explain. I'm not, people think that I'm a smart guy. I mean, meaning people think that I've got these lofty degrees, or, you know, I have, you know, some type of long list of academic achievements. I have none of that. I'm just a basic guy. The only thing, though, is that I love to read and I love words. And I noticed that in our country, we have a phonetic problem. Mm-hmm. By and large, most of our people know how to spell words, but we don't know how to correctly pronounce those words.
Yeah.
That's where the problem is. And I saw this gap, you know, and basically there is a phonetic problem.
Mm.
Yeah. So in an effort to sort of, you know, throw in my two cents worth, I came up with this idea of pronouncing words correctly. Initially, it was just for fun, you know, because I love to do that. And then I sort of adopted a line that my mother used to say when I was a kid. You know, whenever she would correct me on something, she would say, meaning that that doesn't exist. It's never existed and it will never exist. So I used that line and sort of incorporated it into my little Facebook lessons.
Beautiful.
Yeah. There's been some response and some traction, and I appreciate that. There are people who appreciate that, and that's who it's for.
Mm.
I'll tell you now, I was at a filling station, and when this guy said this to me, I was thinking, that can't be true. That can't be possible. I was filling my car up. This was back home in Zambia, and the fuel attendant walks up to me and says, "You're Mr. Mwewa. Do you know that I passed my exams because of you?
Wow.
My English exams because of you. So I looked at him and I thought, well, that's a nice thing to say. And I said, well, you know, I'm glad to hear that. But as I drove off, I was thinking, how does that happen?
Yeah,
how would I? Because, you know, I do, my words are in snippets, you know, they're little vignettes.
Yes.
I don't do long sort of, you know, lessons and all. But this kid said this to me, and I, you know, I thought, wow, that's fantastic.
It really is. It's a mindset thing. You know, as a writer myself, and I call myself a writer, not just because I can like actually write pieces, but I feel like writing and expressing yourself using language and words is much more powerful than people give it credit for. Mm. You know, you're able to inspire people visually, mentally, emotionally.
Yeah.
You're able to get people to move. You're able to inspire activism. And how you use your language will determine how effectively you're able to guide those people, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't like when folks always kind of diminish use of language, like excellent use of language, right? To something of a statement, like you're trying to make some kind of statement about, for example, like you're saying, Mr. Mwewa, your education status or whether or not you're intelligent, you know, or how Western, you know, Westernly well-adjusted you are. No, it's not about that. It's about how well can I communicate my feelings, which are very difficult to communicate, by the way, unless you're there physically. And even then, it's a stretch. My feelings, my thoughts, my ideologies to you in a way that is positive, that can activate you in a positive way.
Yeah.
Right. And the only way I believe you can do that is by mastering the use of language. So if you're going to speak in English, master that thing.
Yeah.
If you're going to speak in Bemba, master it. Sesotho, Setswana, whatever language it is, master that thing, especially when you're creative and you're creating.
Yeah.
Because what it will do is it will spurn off a series of actions that will come from what it is you say. People will pass exams because of what you said and how you said it. People will do riots because of what you said and how you said it.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Donald Trump, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So you have to almost think of language differently.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what your TikTok does. It encourages people to think of language differently, you know?
Mm. It reminds me of Mensa Otterbill from Ghana. He's a pastor. And I was listening to one of his message tapes. And he said that he studies language because he realizes that a lot of his audience will never see him live. They listen to him on message tapes.
Mm.
So he has to use words impactfully and he has to be as descriptive as possible. And that's why he really goes into getting the right language when he prepares. So that's to your point as well. Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah. I mean, I there's a saying in Zambia. It's a sort of an unwritten rule. What do they say? They say, let us meet in spelling. Have you heard this?
Mm.
Yeah, this is a very common Zambian thing. Whenever you correct someone, they'll say to you, "Oh no, let us meet in spellings." What they're saying to you is, as long as you've understood what I've said, even though I've mispronounced the word, as long as you've understood what I've said, even though I have mispronounced it, as long as I can spell it correctly,
then we're good.
Then we're fine. You know, and I think there's an element of mediocrity in that.
Yeah.
And I don't think we should accept that. We need to change the narrative. We need to stop adopting this mantra of "let us just meet in spellings." No. Not only are you required to spell it correctly, but say it correctly.
So interestingly, and this is one which might also fascinate the hip hop artist in you, there's a very well-liked Zambian hip-hop artist who's making inroads even outside of Zambia. And because of that issue with pronunciation, I find it difficult to listen to him because when you rap, you need to rhyme words correctly. But because he mispronounces words, he feels that he's got, well, instinctively, he thinks he's got license then to rhyme a word which doesn't exist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
so
when I'm listening, it's jarring because right. if you say, instead of saying Trump, if you say tramp,
yeah,
mm-hmm. means that you will be feeling that the next word you can rhyme is amp.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which is incorrect because you know what I mean? Because you're a departure point. Sure. And that's what happened. There's a lot of that with that particular, you know, rap yeah. artist, but you know.
It's like the word, I must tell you, and I'm only saying this because this was taught to me.
Yeah.
For many years, I said it the wrong way.
Okay.
And you know, you're conditioned to thinking, especially when you don't check something up, you think, well,
yeah,
that's the way it's said.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
The word pronunciation.
Oh yeah.
I for years
you say pronunciation.
Yeah. It's actually pronunciation.
Yeah.
We can say pronounce,
yeah,
but we can't say pronunciation.
Yeah.
It's pronunciation. Yeah. And somebody brought that to my attention. They said, Mr. Moira, do you know that you said that incorrectly?
Yeah.
And I said, what do you mean? She says, no, you cannot say pronunciation.
Yeah.
It's pronunciation. And then they show it to me. They
yeah.
they show me the spelling. You
yeah.
know, N-U-N. Pronun.
Yeah.
N-U-N-C-A-T-I-O-N.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the light came on.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's it, the same way it was taught to me.
Yeah.
Anyone who says that, I teach it to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it sticks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. I like that. I think I saw a video like that as well on your TikTok as well.
Yeah.
Speaking about pronunciation. Mm-hmm. So in hip hop, there's this guy. His name is Tariq Trotter, also known as Black Thought
yeah.
of the Roots Crew.
Yeah.
Black Thought.
He's royalty.
He's excellent at the
yeah.
use of language
yeah.
and
wow.
vocabulary. Mm. So what he will do in that space, like he will take a sentence that ends with like, say, Templar, right?
Mm.
And then the next line will be Exemplar.
Mm.
But he won't say exemplar or templar. He will say templar and then say exemplar, right?
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
But he will only do that because the next rhyme will yeah. probably have a similar kind of phonetic sound to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So he only says that not because that's his own way of pronouncing it, but because artistically in how he crafts his verse,
yeah.
there's a sense to the mispronunciation
yeah,
of those
yeah,
words.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I love about being able to master your craft with,
yeah, yeah.
you know, pronunciation, vocabulary, and language, is you can then bend those rules
yeah.
and adjust them how you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think us, in general, when we do African languages and we speak in African languages, we do that a lot.
Yeah.
And then we start adding sound effects. And then we start adding, like, you know, he fell down like,
oh,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? Now, if you don't know how he fell down like okay,
yeah, now you know.
Then it's tricky. But
yeah,
if you
yeah.
know how he fell down like, but you decide to bend it a little bit and say he fell down like boom.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go in the world, people get a sense of how you giddy, right?
Yeah, that's our version of it.
Right,
yeah.
giddy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So there you go. But that's language. And I like that that's something we all have in common with you. You know, another thing we have in common is our love for new media and new technologies, which is something you have embraced wholeheartedly. You know, have you always had a knack for new media and new technology?
No, there is no knack of anything. It's everything is just stumbled upon by accident. You discover it and you think, okay, this works. And I must tell you, at my age, I'm 52 years old. Mm-hmm. One of the things I would constantly hear, and I still do on occasion, is, well, you're too old to be on Facebook. You're too old to be on TikTok. And that used to just rile me the wrong way
mm-hmm.
because I'd think, well, who are you to tell me how old a person is and how
right.
old they're supposed to be
yeah.
to be on TikTok?
Yeah.
You know, so I had to break through that. You know what they do is the audience, if you listen too much to the audience, they will derail you.
Yeah.
You have to really stay true to who you are.
100%.
Of course, you know, constructive, and you know, we say it all the time.
Mm.
Constructive criticism is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you listen to the voices of, well, you're not supposed to do that.
Mm.
You shouldn't be there. That's your age dictates that you shouldn't be on that.
Mm.
If you start listening to that, your creativity is literally snuffed out.
100%.
Yeah. Mm. So you just have to just break through that wall and say, look, if you don't like it, well, you can jump through this.
Yeah, exactly.
Jump through this and there's the door.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then they label you because when you push back, because this is I've sussed social media audiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Social media audiences don't like it when you, as you, the creator, they don't like it when you're assertive and you push back, because somehow there's this idea that the audience is there for you, and if you offend the audience, they'll leave. But that's not true. You know, if the audience, the audience has to fall in line with what you're trying to project. Yeah, that's my view. I don't buy into this that, no, don't offend the audience. No, if you offend me, I'll push back. And I love the block button. I think the block button is a God-given feature. Honestly, really, I use it so much, it's incredible. It's one of those features you use and you just want to, every so often, just want to write a letter to Mark Zuckerberg and say, you know what? I love you, Mark. I love you.
Thank you so much for this feature.
I will not block you, Mark.
Yeah.
What do you think, Chilu?
No, I think you've got a point. I you know, it's one of those things whereby, not with me, because I think I'm very, you know, cushy. I do block a lot, though. But I think based on what I do, I haven't had that confrontational, you know, relationship with the audience. Now and again, you know, the old man in me will come out and, you know, put somebody straight. But I kind of agree when you say that, you know, a lot of people will give you that ultimatum, like, I will leave because ABCD. But, you know, let them leave, you know.
Let's go.
Yeah, let them go. And then more likely than not, they won't go.
Yeah.
Or if you block them, they'll create another account and still come back and try and troll you.
It's interesting you say that, Chilu, because can I tell you, and I know this sounds a bit harsh, every single person that has ever said that to me, every single person without exception that says to me, well, I'm going to leave, I always respond to that and say, you know what? I'm going to kick you off here. You don't even have to leave.
Let me make it easy for you. You're gone.
You don't have, I'm just going to kick you off and that's it. Yeah, and that's I'll cast you into the sea of my forgetfulness.
I want to find out what's your view. But before I do that, I wanted to check, because you do have people who, you know, respond to you that way on social media. Does it ever offend you? Like, do you get touched where you, like, it's, it ruins your day? Or is it just kind of, you know, you compartmentalize it in a way like this, you know, this is par for the course and you let it go?
That's a good question. I in the beginning, it used to bother me. It used to really get me. But then I realized, wait a minute, I don't know these people. They don't even know me, you know? So, and I'm the one, sorry to sound prideful, but I'm the one with on the higher ground, meaning, you know, I can get rid of them. They can't get rid of me. You know, if they really wanted to, I mean, you know, it's really up to me. So, so in the beginning, it used to bother me. Then I found comfort. I found so much comfort in knowing that, you know what? Once you get rid of them, in 2 hours, you won't even know, you won't even remember their name or what they look like. So in the beginning, to answer your question, in the beginning, it did. It doesn't anymore.
Okay.
That's powerful. You know, my view is, So there's this concept that we're speaking about. It's called audience capture. I know you've heard of it, but it's literally what we're saying now, where your audience starts to then dictate what your content will be. And then all of a sudden you lose your identity, you lose your way, and then you start to pander to them almost. In doing that, you think you're gaining short-term gains, right? Because you're giving them what they want. Give the people what they want. But long-term, you find that the audience isn't like one giant monolith, right?
Yeah.
They're diverse in what they want. And you will think they're all united by a cause. They're not. Everybody has their own opinion about everything. The only one that should matter when you're creating should be yours.
Yeah.
But because of that feedback loop that we have online, we constantly feel like they quote-unquote matter.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they don't matter as much as they do.
You know when that hit me? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so personally, from my own personal view, and this is a lesson that I'm learning from people like Mr. Mueva here, I think I gave them way too much credit in the sense that I thought it was a platform of engagement, meaningful engagement, where you could have two-way street of engagement. And I learned very early on in my adoption of social media that that's not the case. And that put me off social media completely. Ever since then, I haven't been active on social media. I haven't even engaged on social media because I felt like, what's going on here? There's no conversations here. We're not talking to each other anymore, you know, well, at all, you know? And I really felt like that was the move for me as a self-protection mechanism, you know? And I cocooned myself behind being just a, you know, voyeur almost, you know, you're just kind of lurking. And then people like me will come around, you know, and they make it their space. They own it. They dictate what happens. They claim that space and they make it useful. And if you're not about it, bounce. There's other spaces to go to. Yeah. And I'm finding that to be very inspirational for creators like myself who've put the audience in too big of a role in my creation, you know, my creation journey.
I get you. I really do. Yeah. I mean, of course, I understand what you mean. It's important to listen to the audience, but it's never a good idea to be completely controlled by the audience.
100%
Because, and they'll do it. I mean, they will control you. And you live in this fear of, oh, I can't say that because it'll offend someone. Or of course we're not promoting being brash and rude and insulting. Of course. I mean, that goes without saying, you know, what we're saying is I should be able to create and have not someone say to me, well, you're too old. And this is what I always say to people who say that to me. I'll say, well, you know what? My age, you're soon going to be my age. Where I am, you're going to be
there. Quickly, too. It happens very quickly.
And you know what I find interesting? Of course, TikTok is different. I used to think that you know, it was pretty much the same thing. But TikTok's got its own spirit, it's got its own way of doing things. What I notice on TikTok is the people that are the most vociferous naysayers are the ones that literally have no following. I found this so strange. The ones, the trolls, you know, these trolls that would come up and they would say the most nasty, negative things. You go to their profile, you find this guy
has nothing going on.
No followers. I mean, literally zero. Not 10, not 20, zero. And people like that, or trolls like that, you don't even waste your time.
Exactly. And a lot of them won't even have their real picture on there because they've created another little account where they're brave enough to come and to come at you. Is what I found. But I was listening to a book, you know, an audiobook. I'm currently listening to it right now. Talib Kweli is a rapper, conscious rapper, as they you know, refer to him as. And he said something similar to what you just said. He says, a lot of people used to tell him that, you know, he should use his time more productively than being on Twitter because he's on Twitter a lot. And he says, and each time he'd get that said to him, he'd look at the profile and realize that these are people who are not even as productive with their time as he is in any case. It's true.
And just on that age thing, right? I think we've now come to a point where we realize that age has nothing to do with the tools that we use.
Yeah.
Right. And if anything, age makes you a little bit more savvy with the tools that you use once you become accustomed to those tools. I'll give you an example. When they used to talk about gaming when you were younger, right? It was always just about a silly little game, like maybe Tetris, right? Let's just say Tetris. It's not a silly little game at all. It's actually a pretty, pretty good game, right?
Yeah.
Gaming has now become the new frontier of where social interaction is going.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're at a point now where the gamers are more ready for emerging technologies like blockchain technology, Bitcoin technology, the metaverse, for example. Web3, as they call it. All of those are built with core gaming principles in mind. So if you're saying to somebody, you're too old for something, right? And you don't understand that, it is in that mindset that you find yourself losing out on the tools that are available for you today to now further express yourself as a creative or even as a professional in whatever field you're in. These tools are actually here for you, regardless of age, regardless of profile. It's a tool, ladies and gentlemen. Tools, I mean, are you too old to use a calculator, a computer, a fork, a television set, you know, a phone? You're never too old for any of these things.
Yeah.
You know, if they're just tools, ultimately, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you mentioned gaming because I know nothing about gaming. Of course, I have kids who talk about this, but you're right. I mean, that is a whole new, that's a whole universe that it's got its own sort of, you know, beneficiaries.
Correct.
It's a whole, now for me, because I don't understand gaming, for me to come and knock it and bash it or say to someone, is that all you do?
Exactly.
Is that all you do? Just game?
And the temptation is high, right?
Yeah.
Because they'll tell you, how old are you? I'm 45 years old. What do you do for a living? I'm a gamer. You think gamer?
Right.
You're out here playing games all day. This is what you do with your life. You're busy playing games all day. This guy is not just busy playing games all day.
Yeah.
He's 45. He's got children. He's got a home that he runs. He's got bills that he pays. And as a gamer, he's in an ecosystem that, like I said, is the technological foundation for where everything is going in the future.
And these guys are making money.
He's the most ready.
Huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you're quick to say gaming.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we've got friends who work for, you know, Facebook or TikTok or whatever, you know, and each time you say to somebody I work for, like, how do you work for Facebook?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
They're seeing one-dimensional view of the platform as we use it, as opposed to what's behind it.
And what it can do, it can do so much
exactly.
more.
The nature of the internet has meant that many boundaries crumbled before our eyes. That some can say that Mr. Mwewa is too old for platforms like TikTok shows that we are still in the hangover of an era that no longer exists. An era where age, location, and other social constructs were real and immovable barriers. But innovative people like Mr. Mwewa have discovered that you can at any point decide to circumvent those barriers and do as you please.
I wanted to ask you guys, since you live here,
yes.
I know in Zambia it's changing at a snail pace, but changing nonetheless, is this use of social media and social media personalities to promote products and brands and mm-hmm. services. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only now beginning to catch on. People are beginning to realize, big corporations are beginning to understand that the money is not always in mainstream advertising, which is, you know, your ZNBC and DSTV, mm-hmm. you know. But there is, what's the word?
Like the influencer marketing.
That is there to be used. Mm-hmm. Here in South Africa, how is that working out? Are content creators looked at as, you know, people that can push brands?
They are.
And are they being used?
Yeah, I'd say they are.
Definitely.
They're people who, even from my network, sometimes it's also in the execution, because you with some people that I know, they've got huge followings on Instagram, huge followings on Facebook, and they'll get paid to, you know, push a product. Could be, you know, a skincare product or whatever. And there's some guys who over time have become experts in how they can kind of introduce that to their audience without it seeming forced, without it seeming as if it's the mandate is to introduce this to you because I've been paid for it.
Right.
And some, you know, do it, some do it extremely well, some don't. But people are, you know, to answer your question, getting paid and being used for that. And they're agencies, they're digital agencies that specialize in getting those kind of deals and pushing them towards influencers.
Mm, 100%.
Interesting.
It's in South Africa, as you say, because of how infrastructurally we're set up, we can actually build an industry around the influencer entrepreneur. It's huge out here. It's probably one of the fastest growing, booming markets for young people in that space. Content creation, whether it's on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, you name it. They are opting to do that before going to university, before going to get a formal job in so-called formal sectors, informal employ. This is what they would rather do. Mm. So much so now that even our authorities and organizations, be they the tax revenue services, the banking organizations, everybody, even credit organizations, consider it now as an influencer job or a social media creator job as a very viable and legitimate profession, you see.
Interesting.
And they're able to supply you with some very staggering figures of how much they paid.
Yeah.
Some of our influencers here are paid more than CEOs at companies.
Wow.
Yes, because they get paid per post by corporate.
Right.
And some of our corporates, our major corporates in South Africa, would rather spend corporate marketing budget on influencers than they would in traditional modes of promoting their products. Yeah. Obviously, it's product sensitive, dependent on what it is you're trying to achieve in your market. But yeah, it's a very viable and huge, huge industry in South Africa.
Interesting.
The one guy who internationally is a good case study for that is Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
Because he started a company called Hart Digital or something.
Kevin Hart, the actor.
The actor, yeah. Wow. I mean, that guy's like shrewd as a businessman. So what he did is, so for instance, if a promoter said, we're going to do a comedy show, Kevin Hart, you're starring in it. Our budget for putting this ad out is X amount, whatnot. Then he'd say, instead of putting that ad into billboards or TV ads, give that budget to Hart Digital and we'll push that through our social media platforms and whatnot. And so by doing so, he was, you know, maintaining all the money. He's getting paid for being the main act. But his people are also, you know, putting together campaigns that he pushes through his platforms.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So here's a random question. Still in the social media space, and then we'll move a little bit more to something different. Both of you, you have children. Your children are on social media. And I can say, or maybe I'm wrong here, you probably have bigger social media footprints than your children. How do your children take that?
Well, I'll go first.
Go.
I have four, my wife and I, we have four kids, and they're older kids. My first one is a medical doctor.
Beautiful.
Second one is a university student. He used to go to school in China. He was studying dentistry. Because of COVID, we had to bring him back. So he's studying at a local university back home. Our third one is a law student. And then the last one is 15 years old. My second one is, he likes YouTube. He's got a knack for, even though he's studying dentistry, you know, he's got a knack for that. But to answer your question, I do have a larger footprint than they do, but they've accepted that this is what I do. Initially, this was like just a side thing, but then I see now that it's a revenue stream. It's a it's a completely different revenue stream, and it works. And the only thing, though, my wife, initially, my wife was very uncomfortable with it because she didn't like the idea that I was always on social media. And she'd say, well, but, you know, what is when I explained it to her and she started seeing the benefits of it, that's when she sort of understood and she was clear about what it is. Now, the agreement we had with my wife was, you can do all your social media stuff, but just don't put me in it and don't put our kids in it.
Oh, okay.
So whatever you create, you can create from your office. Because, you know, I've sort of created a
studio,
like a little studio. And then I vlog and I shoot videos in and around my area of work. And that's how it works for me. So she says, we agreed. She says, you know what? I see you enjoy this. And it does make money, and that's great, but leave me and the kids out of it, because social media in Zambia can get very ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah. She says, I don't want a situation where I see my kids' photograph and then your audience is tearing into my kids. I don't want that. So if, and then she says to me, she says, if they're going to tear into somebody, just let it be you.
Yeah, you can go ahead and burn out there. Just don't burn my kids.
Yeah.
Just don't burn our home. Yeah, you can come back all burnt to a crisp.
Yeah.
But just don't burn the kids.
Yeah. And that works for us. Now, of course, this doesn't work for everybody. I mean, there are vloggers out there. Their whole gig, their whole act is about them as a couple.
Yeah.
And that works for them. But for us, this is what works for us.
Has it ever, before I answer my part, has it ever happened that they have been impacted in any way during, you know, the time that you've been doing it? Has, you know, like maybe through something you say and people want to get in and talk about them?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
In the comments.
One time my daughter, who's a doctor, I'd said something. I forget what I said, but, you know, she was very angry with me.
Yeah.
And she calls me up and she says, Daddy, can't say that.
Yeah,
because I'm a medical doctor and everybody's looking at me, and you know, so every so often that does happen. But my kids have been very good about not making it known that I am their father.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, every so often, what my son said to me a few weeks ago, said, you know, one of his university friends said, you know who you look like. So my son was so good with this. He says, who do I look like? He says, you look like that man on Facebook. And my son says, really? You know what? I get that a lot. And he walked away.
Kept it moving.
He walked away. Yeah.
Oh, they will sell you off. The jeans will sell you off every time. Jeans don't lie.
Oh, man. So what about you, Chilu?
No, so my kids, I mean, their followings are compared to mine, like nothing even close, you know. And I'm not saying it in a boastful way, but not near close.
Yeah, take that, my daughters. Take
nothing
that.
Nothing even close, boy.
No, but the
yet.
Yeah, I should say yet. But I think it's pretty cool. I mean, because of the fact that I've got this artistic side, which is in the public, you know, domain. They want to know, I think initially they didn't know how to kind of respond to it. Like when I put out a book, they'd be taking, you know, the book, and I think they're going to read it, and I'm, you know, happy, but it's just so that they could, you know, floss at school and stuff like that. So, you know, they're still in that phase where I think it's not as defined, I suppose, as with your situation. And what was the question again? How did they respond?
You're answering it perfectly.
Yeah.
You're
answering it perfectly. Yeah, so I think we're cool like that. I mean, I'm on TikTok with nowhere near as many followers as you have. I think I'm on 10,000 or so. You're on 100, 200. What are you on?
Well, 140. It's 100. Then this is what I don't get. I should know this. But this is something I just, you know, it's in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
I always say to myself, I need to know. I need to understand what is the difference between likes and followers.
Maybe. Right. Yeah. Well, likes, I think, is the number of times that people have interacted and pushed that little button to, you know, give you a heart in terms of your overall content. But then some guys, I think, will like your stuff, but not necessarily follow. So your likes will always be a bigger number than your follows, if I'm correct.
Yeah, which is
your
is.
Situation.
Yeah, because I think I'm on 137,000
follows. Yes, which is still huge.
600,000 likes.
That's massive. That is
massive. I mean, look, massive, yeah. I probably have like 2 on TikTok. Zero posts for now. I'm just there. I just reserve the profile. but for now. Yeah. But what I love about TikTok and what it has become is it has become a platform where the content more than ever, right, is becoming the key point of value. So follows, yes, follows, definitely. They're incredible. The number means a lot and it's great. But the likes, as you say, that lets you know that your content that you're actually creating matters, right? And I think that's why TikTok has become, for now at least, the fastest growing social media platform is because people now have realized that the true value in when you create is the creation itself and the emotion tied around it, you know? And I celebrate that.
It's interesting about TikTok. I was reading something about the way the Chinese are doing TikTok. There's something called endless scrolling, which is, you know, the idea that your phone, your device is in front of you and then you're doing the flip motion with your finger. You can literally, and I know you guys know this and experience this, you can literally sit there an endless scroll for 10 hours. You can do it for 5 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and the time you just watch. So the Chinese saw that this is a problem. You can't have kids that are on TikTok for 5 hours. So what they do in China is that they've limited the number of hours you have access to TikTok.
Really?
Yeah. That's number one. Number two, they inject lessons in that hour or 2 hours that you're allowed, every 15 minutes, there's like a little, like a math quiz that you have to solve in order to continue.
Nice.
You know? Yeah. So, you know, or like nice. like some little question.
Puzzle or something.
Yeah. That you have to do.
Yeah.
Something academic, you know, something educational that allows you to keep going for, but then they give you, there's a quota, you know, that you can't endless scroll. And I think this is where, because TikTok is great as it is, and it's fantastic. I'm telling you, it is a time sap. My goodness. And if you don't use it the way it's supposed to be used, it can destroy you. I mean, in terms of time, because it literally just saps your time.
Yeah.
You know, the worst thing you could ever do is, and I did it today, is to say, okay, I'm getting ready. I've got an appointment, but let me just check TikTok for 2 minutes. You'll be on there for an hour.
Yeah.
And then you'll end up rushing. So really, and I know we say this, you know, we all, everybody says this, we have to be disciplined with our time. But I'm telling you, that TikTok, it'll
burn through those hours. Those productive hours will go.
While the evolution of tech has highlighted the fast rate of societal change, it also shone the light on some of the things that haven't changed. When news of the pandemic broke, the same fear that had marked previous pandemics made its presence felt. We were scared to die. So while our evolution cannot be ignored, there are parts of our humanity that haven't changed at all.
So we've gone through this thing, this COVID thing, and it was 2 long years and some change now, you know, more almost. And now I think we've got it behind us, you know, I believe we do. And going forward, we're just going to have to live with the repercussions, however they look like. What are those repercussions for you? How do they look like for you? How do you feel like that period we've gone through has changed you?
You know, that sounds to me like an academic question.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have an answer for that. All I can share with you is my experience as a people back home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, initially when this thing first came out, we were all so fearful. We didn't know what was going on. And we were sure, you know, as soon as somebody gets it, they're going to die.
Mm.
And then, you know, humanity being who we are, you know, we're so resilient. We came up with a vaccine. And for my family and I, of course, I recruited everybody to get the vaccine. And what's interesting is when I got to South Africa, some nurse said to me, she said, "Which vaccine did you get back there?" I said, "We got the AstraZeneca." She says, "Oh, no, here in South Africa, we outlawed that thing." You know? so she says, "You need to get the Pfizer." She says to me, you know, she says, "You get the Pfizer, you're done for, mate." So I, you know, so we went through that. It did change the way we did business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then there's a positive side to that. I was talking to somebody today that the whole operation is run from home now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they've saved millions of kwacha from paying rent to just working at home. And of course, I don't think it works for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there has been some type of benefit.
Mm.
And I'd like to agree with you when you say we're on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, although every so often they'll come up with a new variant, you know, and say, well, this variant trumps this vaccine and all that. So I'm thankful. I really am. I'm thankful that we even have a vaccine.
Mm.
I know there are anti-vaccine people out there, which to me is amazing. You know, it's amazing to me that people, "No, don't get the vaccine. Yeah, we don't know what these people have put in there." But do you know what's in Panadol?
Panadol is even a stretch. Do you know what's in chicken licking in the KFC? You have just bought a McDonald's burger.
Uh-huh.
If McDonald's would like to sponsor this podcast, feel free to
let us know.
But we don't know what's in your burgers. I'm just going to tell you that. We don't study your burgers. We don't know what's in those things.
Yeah.
But we do know what's in the vaccines.
Yeah.
Are you a spiritual man?
Yes, I am.
Deeply spiritual?
Yes.
Did this experience bring you closer to God?
No. I'm a Christian. My faith is, I'm a born-again Christian.
Okay.
So I feel I've always had a relationship with God. And I wouldn't say it brought me closer to God. No, it didn't. I mean, I've had a relationship with him since I was 17, 18.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say that this vaccine brought me closer to God. I wouldn't say that.
Okay. Yeah. Did you have thoughts of your own mortality throughout this period?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And let me tell you, and I alluded to it earlier. I said there was a time we were thinking, my whole family, you know, we better not get this thing because this thing's going to kill one of us. You know, and we were fearful. I would imagine you guys were fearful.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
We were just so, but let me tell you what's interesting. Is that there was a time initially when you know, it first came out, everybody was scared. But then after a while, people were thinking, well, you know, especially in the markets, they said, well, if it's going to get us, it's going to get us. I'm not staying home. I'm not going to wear a mask all day long, you know, and I'm not going to get that vaccine that they're telling me to get, you know. So you have my business is directly opposite the largest market in the whole of Zambia, which is a city market.
Mm-hmm.
And I interact with 90% of those people. I mean, there are thousands of people in there. And many of them believe that this is something that we're just going to have to live with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to die from it, we're going to die from it. That's the general consensus.
You became so resilient after a while. Once we got over the initial fear, once we got over the fact that, okay, maybe we're not going to die. Maybe we're just going to have to be cautious and weather the storm. You know, speaking more of the changes in society, we are all Christian here. We kind of come from a Christian foundation and a Christian basis. What are your views of where we are now as a society?
Chilu.
I saw the quick sidestep.
Oh, yeah. I was gonna say
that was so quick.
Go ahead. As the co-host, I was listening to this and
another sidestep.
How's he gonna answer this question? But that's a very valid question. I mean, you went to Bible school, didn't you?
I did, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I enjoyed every moment of it.
So let's hear your take on this.
Well, I don't know how to answer that question. You know?
Okay, you know what?
It's a very broad question.
It's very, very. Yeah. I didn't want to make it too specific because I didn't want to limit you too much.
Hone it down, though.
Okay, let's hone it down. Let's compartmentalize.
So that I know what I'm talking about. I'll never forget when, I don't know if you guys remember this. There was a time, this was when Barack Obama was the president.
Yeah.
Some crisis happened over there in the States. And apparently, according to the press, Obama didn't respond quick enough. They wanted him to respond. But so, you know, finally he addresses the press pool and all. So some reporter stands up and says, "Mr. President, why didn't you respond 2 days ago?" And he said, "Well, it's because I want to know what I'm talking about before I talk about it. Okay? I'm not gonna open my mouth for the sake of opening up. I want to know what I'm talking about." So here it is.
I love it.
I said all of that to say, I need to know what the heck you're talking about.
Okay. So let me narrow it down before you become Obama critical here, you know?
Critical.
Yeah. I think that our families are changing.
Yeah.
Okay? And I think that our family values were based on biblical teachings, Christian teachings. This is my perspective, my own personal view. You know, I feel like that's changing now. And I feel like the change that that's bringing, right, depending on how you see it and who you are, is either a negative one or a positive one for broader society. What are your thoughts?
Okay, well, let me say this. let me just go ahead and jump on in the deep end.
Dive in. One
of the things that I've noticed in the last several years is the erosion of family values.
Mm-hmm.
People, and I know that sounds so preachy and all that, but I find that people, you know, back home, 22,000 divorces were recorded this past year.
No.
Yeah, 22,000. Now, of course, that's a paltry sum compared to the population of South Africa. But my point is this, and this is how I choose to answer your question, because I don't think there's a right way to answer your question.
No, there isn't.
The way I'm feeling it.
100%.
I think people, they don't value marriage anymore. This is what I see. I see that marriage, people just walk in and out anytime they want. There's no sense of commitment. It's all, well, I feel I don't love you today. I feel this. And because I feel I don't love you, then maybe this is not working, you know. That bothers me. Now, keep in mind, I'm not a perfect man. I've been married for 22 years. And in the 22 years that I've been married, we've had issues, many, many issues. But the one thing I always wish we could hold on to as a people is the sense of commitment. That you, when you enter a marriage, it's not about how you feel. Once you make that commitment, make it work. You know, of course, there are extenuating circumstances that may lead to a divorce. I mean, if you're in a marriage that your husband is pummeling you half to death every 3 weeks, you know, you probably need to walk out of that before he kills you. But I'm just talking about basic commitment. It's not there. I don't see it. And the young people now, I feel that young people don't like marriage. They don't talk about that. The young people are into, oh, no, let's just sort of hang and see how it goes. And if it doesn't go, it goes. You know, we just, it's sad. It really is sad. And I think that, I don't know how we're going to change that or if we can, you know, or maybe it's just the way society is. And all you can do is hold on to the few, you know, little remnants of commitment and family values that you can hold on to and I guess pass it on to your kids, you know, pass those values on to your kids so that they can pass them on to their kids.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, John Osteen, I tell this joke because, you know, I heard John Osteen tell this joke years ago. You know who John Osteen is?
Yeah,
John O's, not Joel.
Yeah, John.
John is this daddy, his father.
Yeah.
Years ago, when he was alive, he told this joke, and I love this joke. He says, John Osteen was married to his wife at that point of the interview. He was being interviewed on a show, on a television show. And I think at that point he'd been married for 25 years or something. So the interviewer asked him, said, Pastor Osteen, in the 25 years that you've been married to your wife, have you ever once thought of divorce? So he looks down, scratches his head, looks up and says, well, I can't think of a time I came close to divorce, but I did come close to murder.
Drop mic.
I came close to murder.
Oh man, what a joke.
Yeah.
I feel like the motivations now have to be different. And you touched on it with marriage as well. When people are marrying these days, I mean, children, bringing families together, building legacies, those aren't in their mindsets anymore. Just the same way the timelines have changed, the kind of objectives have changed for marrying. People are marrying for all kinds of weird reasons these days. So why wouldn't they break it up after 2 years? It doesn't serve their purpose anymore. Why wouldn't they move on to the second marriage in their 40s? Because now they don't want children anymore because they've had them in their first marriage. Now they want to experience love, actually. not raise a family. Because I had the woman to raise families with. Yeah. Now I have the money and the time and the energy to experience love and passion and travel with a fly, young, hot girl next to me.
A girl
next to me. They divorced their partner who they built a home and a legacy with to go be the girl them. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they are 45. Yeah, I have money. My children are grown. You know. So of course we're living in a time now where, listen, we have to change. We have to move.
Amazing.
Some of these things make sense today, I believe.
Yeah.
Others just don't anymore.
Yeah.
It's singles time. Let's make the single.
I don't mean to digress, but you know, you do a very good South African accent.
I told you I've lived here since 1996.
It's girls.
Oh, no, girl could be Jamaica. It could be London. It could be anywhere.
I was hearing like patois.
Yeah, girl could be anywhere. Them.
Guys, speaking of South Africa, I did a TikTok and I had so many people say, no, Mr. Moira, that's wrong. We don't say that here.
Yeah.
And then I realized, it wasn't so much the South African culture. It was just a South African TikTok that went viral. I did a video where I said, in Zambia, you know, when you see an attractive woman, you say, that's my type. E type yandi.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then I said, but in South Africa, when they see an attractive woman, they say, hey, you're bored, man. You're bored. You're bored.
What was the reaction?
The reaction says, no, Mr. Moira, we don't say that. You've been watching too much TikTok. Because that's off of a TikTok, apparently. Have you seen this one? Yeah, there's a South African guy.
Mambincha.
Do you know him?
Yeah.
So you're familiar with that?
Of course. Yeah, of course.
So there's, oh, you're bored. You're bored.
Well, you bodied that accent.
You definitely did.
So someone says, no, you've been watching too much TikTok.
South Africans
don't say that.
I'm sure you've been also asked, you don't speak like a Zambian.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm sure that's been a lot.
Yeah, that's been the story.
Yeah,
of your
but
life.
Then I have what they call a residual accent.
Okay.
It's sort of, I turn it off and on when I need to. Yeah. And it works for me. It does, you know?
Residual accent, I'm going to bookmark
Residual,
that.
I love it.
Yeah.
But fantastic. I think we all kind of, and we're talking about it the other day.
Yeah.
It's almost like a, isn't it an EQ thing? Like emotional intelligence, where you're able to adjust what accent you use depending on context and what you're trying to communicate.
It's biblical.
It has to be.
It's biblical. The Apostle Paul said, be all things to all men.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's not being fake. It just means you're adapting.
Mm.
You're there's another word for it. You're acclimating.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. You know, you're becoming, you're morphing into your environment.
So what are you looking forward to this year?
Well, I just want to be a good, when I say good, I don't mean like good as opposed to bad, an efficient content creator.
Yeah.
I really want to take it to the next level. And because, you know, this is a full-time job. I mean, literally, In the beginning, it was just something I did on, but I really, because I've started investing in equipment and, and things, cameras and all. So this year, I really want to hone it down and just, as they say in the business, level up.
Yeah.
Love how you put it. That is exactly what they say, level up.
Yeah.
And it's great to see someone as successful as you on the space, who's gotten the impact that he's had and the accolades and the acclaim that he's had, still talk about, no, it's time to level up. Take it seriously. Yeah. Get even better. You know, it's a great attitude to have. Most people would stop at where you are.
Yeah.
And they'll think they've arrived. Yeah. They'll be like, yep, I'm done. This is it. You know?
And I enjoy it.
Yeah, it comes across that you enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, we see your smile. Yeah. We see you when you laugh before you do the boom. Well, this man has enjoyed himself with that one. This man is killing himself with this one. He's really enjoyed this one.
I love it.
And I've really enjoyed this podcast.
Too, well, thank you,
guys. It was such a pleasure to meet you. And yeah, we've had other conversations outside of this one that I've really enjoyed thoroughly. So
thank
you very much for making the time.
Thank you, Zubs.
All of the best.
And thank you, Chilulemba.
Gen Xers and some millennials are the last bridge to the world that was. There's a tension there between the values and lens of our childhoods and the world we have to thrive in today. Both technology and society have moved a million miles away from that place we once inhabited. So sometimes that tension looks like contradiction. But that is the beauty of being born in a space and time that doesn't stay static. Mr. Mwewa personifies that, rooted in the teachings of his earlier life, but with his head in the clouds enough to allow for the future to unfold in front of him, unencumbered by barriers from a time now gone.